But what we do in the Imprint Center is really work with different companies. We work with, different government agencies, small businesses, startups. And what our purpose is to really support them in creating the next generation of types of additive manufacturing. So we're creating new fabrication methods here, as well as new materials.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for listening to the Fabrication Friday podcast. I'm your host, Joe Fairley, certified prosthetist, 3D printing enthusiast, and owner of Ascent Fabrication. Fabrication Friday is an all-around fun time where I talk about 3D printing applications, conduct interviews with industry leaders, and much more. Come join us every Friday for an informational discussion around the evolution of the additive manufacturing field and how we utilize various digital workflows and 3D printing methods in our daily work at Ascent Fabrication.
How's it going, everyone? Thank you for coming back to the Fabrication Friday podcast this week. I've got a very special guest. All of them are special, but this one in particular, Jade and I go back quite a few years now to a pretty interesting 3D printing project in prosthetics down in Haiti, actually. Jade Myers is a research development specialist at the RIT AM Print Center. And I'm very happy to have Jade on here. We both have very, busy schedules. So thanks for coming on with me today.
But of course, I'm happy to be here. Thanks for inviting me. It's always good to catch up with you, Joe.
Of course, as always. So we had, going back to, 2017, 2018, we had the 3D printing upper extremity prosthetics project going down in Port-au-Prince, Haiti. And that was through the Enable Community Foundation at the time, with the Victoria Hand Project in conjunction with them. You were involved in at least one of those visits down to Haiti, right? Were you just down in that one time, or was there a second time?
I've been down to Haiti, oh my gosh, probably 13 times.
Yeah.
But in that context, I think with the Enable Community Foundation once before they switched to LimForge.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So, you've obviously have a very personal experience down in Haiti, like we have as well. But down there we were trying to implement some 3D printing in the prosthetics and orthotics clinic at Healing Hands for Haiti. In conjunction with Victoria Hand Project, we had brought down 7 Ultimaker 2 Plus extendeds in some black rucksack bags and, implemented a training program for the prosthetist orthotist down there to otherwise take 3D scans of, Haitian amputees that were affected either by the 2010 earthquake or, any other traumatic or otherwise limb loss experience. Extent, I had gone down about 3 times over the course of a year and a half, twice with other people and once by myself. That was quite the experience. What did you gain from, your experience with ECF down there, while we were down there together?
Oh my gosh. I mean, it was certainly an experience that stuck with me, and has never left. I've gained a bigger family because of it, as you know now.
Right.
Some of the first folks that were helping us co-design and giving us feedback on those first device designs there in Haiti are now living next door to me.
Right.
Because of some of the safety issues currently in Haiti. So I guess it had an impact, you could definitely say. And it's really guided the research that I've done from that point forth.
Yeah. No, that's definitely par for the course, I think, with how we've experienced Haiti and experienced their culture and their people down there. And while it's horrible what's going on down there right now, you and I are very fortunate to have some of our friends here with us in the US safe and sound and, you know, looking forward to new futures. So happy for them. But, you know, with the 3D printing that you've been involved in, were you involved in much 3D printing before Haiti, or was that kind of your first experience with 3D printing? How did your, you know, journey into the industry kind of come about?
So I started, I guess it's been about 10 years now. I think it was the end of 2014 when I kind of began 3D printing, and it was accidental a little bit. I mean, I was working on a completely unrelated to, you know, the prosthetics industry project, you know, involving slime mold, believe it or not, but doing a separate project to, I don't know if you know anything about slime mold, you're going to get a little lesson here. But
no, I don't. Go for it. Yeah.
It's basically this kind of protist animal that has been around for millennia. It is very, very intelligent. However, it does not have a brain. And that's where I found interest in it. This thing can solve mazes. It can find the shortest path from one place to another. You'll have to look it up. It's really, really cool. But yeah, my interest when I, you know, began college was really in the brain and in intelligence. I did have interest in, you know, kind of robotic myoelectric prostheses and neuroelectric prostheses that could be controlled by the brain and things like that. And when I got to my master's, neuroprostheses was kind of my area of study. Mm-hmm. So I had that sort of background, but yeah, as far as 3D printing went, I was doing a project on intelligence with these slime molds, and I wanted to create a topological map to create a bike path between RIT, our university, and the University of Rochester, which is, you know, only about 10, 15 minutes from here.
Yeah.
So I was doing a shortest path problem to see if, you know, these slime molds could actually beat, and I'm dating myself here, but MapQuest, to find the shortest path.
Sure.
Places, but so what I wanted to do was create this topological map for the slime mold to traverse its way through that was, you know, identical to you know, the actual terrain here. And you know, there was a professor on campus at the time that, you know, had a couple of 3D printers in his lab, and this was kind of new, you know, things, you know, after some patents expired, you know, there was sort of that explosion of desktop printers that came out, you know, for fused filament fabrication. And, you know, this lab had them. So I went and checked out the lab. And that was right around when we started to hear that, you know, there was an organization, you know, developing here at RIT that was working to create, we'll say, prosthetic devices. You know, we've learned a lot certainly since then about what that means.
Sure.
But 3D printed devices meant to help folks that, you know, had limb differences to do some tasks of daily living and things like that. Or to just, you know, look cool if you're a little kid who might be picked on in school and things like that. So we were trying to, you know, we were trying to work with printers then in this context. We learned a lot, as I said, you know, through the years about, you know, like maybe some of the ideas that we had about, you know, anyone being able to download designs who had a printer should be printing things off and things like that, you know, from where they are, the amount of experience. Like, you know, we learned a lot about the need for clinical input. There's a reason why people go to school to become, you know, certified prosthetists, orthotists. So, you know, in order to make devices that, you know, will help people, you know, actually in life to function correctly and to not injure them, you know, it's super important to have that clinical input. And I think that was one of the things that was missing in those beginning days.
Yeah, no, it's definitely interesting to see that development, because I can remember, you know, back in 2016 when I started getting involved with the Enable, you know, global volunteer group that, there are a lot of 3D printers around the world already and people wanting to help, but then what's the best, you know, solution for them to get involved, and kind of how are these devices, you know, being presented to people with limb differences? and otherwise involving clinicians or not involving clinicians. Definitely a lot of lessons learned, but I think a lot of good came out of that experience, you know, from both of our viewpoints here.
Oh, certainly. And certainly educationally, yeah. You know, working in a university, seeing the impact that, you know, that movement has had on getting people interested in 3D printing and starting to make that link between, oh, you know, what I, you know, these skills that I have that I'm gaining in 3D printing, they can be used to positively impact others. You know, that making that link is super important. But then, you know, as you get into it, then, you know, you learn more and you start to develop really usable solutions. But it's a really great place to start to get that initial experience with being able to print things, to put them together, to make a thing. It's a very empowering, beginning, you know, to go from concept to a thing.
Yeah, no, for sure. It's a huge learning experience too, if you've never been involved with 3D printing in general, because there's so many steps, right? You know, there's the CAD steps to initialize a design, and then there's the slicing, and then the printing and post-processing. And sometimes you have to kind of go back and forth between the few in order to, you know, really come up with a usable result, right? And again, a lot of lessons learned from the work in Haiti and beyond here. But with your progression there, then after some of that involvement in Haiti, did you then go right into, you know, you had a PhD and research position there at RIT, right? And that was involved with 3D printing?
Yes. Oh, yes. I ended up doing two master's degrees and then a PhD here at RIT, kind of along with and after that experience in Haiti. I was doing that sort of alongside, and I was also teaching. I do teach a class on 3D technologies for prosthetic applications here at RIT. So it's kind of a it's a real hands-on class. I mean, students are printing from the moment they step into class. Essentially, they're starting to get that hands-on experience because of that empowerment that comes with just, you know what? I think a lot of people that haven't had experience with 3D printing are sort of intimidated by it and, you know, think it's a lot more challenging than maybe it is to just actually get started. But once you get started, you know, you learn more and more and you understand some of the complexities by doing, you know, and, you know, things like learning about, you know, anisotropic materials, because things are in layers when you're using FFF printing and how that affects the strength of parts and things like that, like by actually doing them and trying things. I think that's a really great way to learn. So students in that class are jumping into that, but they're also really learning, you know, in the first few weeks about, you know, the needs for prosthetic devices, particularly in low resource regions, because there's a lot to think about that, you know, students, especially, I mean, it's an interdisciplinary class, but a lot of times engineering students have the mindset of just, you know, okay, I'm going to solve the problem. You know, I'm going to jump in. I got a solution already. You know what I mean? But before really backing up and understanding what the needs are, you know, so that's one of the things we do sort of initially is like, wait a little bit, you know, figure out why you need to create things in certain ways, what materials you should be using. You know, if you're, for instance, if you're, you know, making something for Haiti, you know, that the materials you use should be able to stand up to, you know, extended UV light exposure, lots of sun there, you know, moisture. How is that going to affect a part over time? Will it, you know, will it be as strong over time if it's exposed to these things, you know, as it was initially? You know, what else might happen here? So, and thinking about, you know, sociocultural needs, because, you know, as you know, Joe, there's a fairly high stigma, you know, related to having disability and limb difference in Haiti that has caused a lot of people, you know, that, you know, we even, you know, interviewed while we were there, you know, they really want devices that look biological, that allow them not to be noticed, as opposed to some of these flashier ones, you know,
right.
the flat things we have in the US.
Oh, the flashy ones. We'll get to that in a minute. Yeah.
The places, you know. So yeah, like learning those needs, and then starting to develop solutions after, really kind of understanding a lot about the needs. So that's that class. That's an undergraduate class. I do teach right now this semester. I'm teaching a graduate level course on personalized 3D printing with our lab director, Dennis Cormier. So sort of a higher level. A lot of the students that come from the prosthetics class and have a lot more interest in doing more than they step onto that. Because, you know, 3D printing is obviously, you know, great for creating very highly personalized, individualized to a person's anatomy and physiology in some cases, you know, parts. So that's what we do in that class.
Yeah, that sounds like a class that I would have wanted to take in college. I mean, that's awesome that coming from, you know, I guess 9 years out of school now, my undergrad, where I started 3D printing back in 2015, you know, kind of stumbling upon it like you had as well. You know, someone said, oh, there's this 3D printer thing down in the basement. You know, why don't you go figure it out and do a, you know, senior capstone project on it. You know, something like your course would have been an awesome opportunity to, you know, really get my hands dirty with exactly what I wanted to know at the time. You know, with that in mind, are your students, you know, coming into that class? Is it an undergrad class? Is it a master's level course? And do they have any experience with 3D printing coming into it?
So, I mean, the answer to that has definitely changed over the last few years.
Yeah.
So since I've been teaching the prosthetics class, that one's an undergrad course. Though I have had a few, you know, grad students in it that I just make them do extra work.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, so but you know, it's the students that come in, it used to be a lot more students came in with zero, no experience. I'm finding in the last 2 years especially, many more students are coming in already having some experience. Some of them, you know, have in their dorm room, they have, you know, an Ender or something, you know, that they're toying around with. It has been changing. It has been changing, but it's great because it keeps me, you know, like I gotta stay ahead of my game, you know.
Right.
At all times, yeah, I'm smart.
Yeah, you're the expert here. You're the teacher, but sometimes, you know, some of the students will teach you something.
Absolutely.
And that's where the most fun times happen, I think, you know, when you can really collaborate with students that way who are so super interested in that course. I think that's an awesome opportunity, you know, again, for 3D printing, but also for prosthetics too. I think, you know, that's a cool, you know, gateway into, you know, getting people interested in working in the prosthetics industry.
For sure. We need more.
Yeah. I mean, have you seen anyone, you know, coming from your course and going into the prosthetics industry yet?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Several actually, but a lot of the students that I've had have gone to Northwestern. I know you,
okay.
You did some time at Northwestern. It's been really neat to see that. It seems like the students that come into the class, being an interdisciplinary class, it's cool to see the different perspectives people bring, because honestly, any background, you know, academically could be pointed in some way toward prosthetic design. And that's essentially what the class is, you know, for design. Mm-hmm. But it seems like I find that the students coming in, they either really have a passion for working with people directly, or they are more passionate about the sort of engineering side of creating the parts and making new designs in that sense. So it's neat to have that kind of balance. And I usually try to, you know, throw students on teams that have both of those sides, you know, so that they can really combine to come up with some really cool projects in that class. So that's really cool. And then, you know, as I said, as students, you know, progress in that class, and if they are hungry for more, you know, 3D printing and have a real interest in that afterwards, then, you know, a lot of them will end up in the graduate level class that I'm teaching now in the spring. And, you know, that then they get introduced to other kinds of printing processes outside of fused filament fabrication. And so they get to, you know, learn a little bit more about, you know, powder bed fusion or, you know, resin-based processes, about ceramics printing or carbon fiber printing, metals printing, things like that. So it opens up a whole new world where, you know, they're like, oh, I got really good at this FF thing. And there's this whole other, you know, world out there. So, you know, it's great. It's great to see that when they get exposed to things like that, to see their imaginations go a little crazy about what's possible.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the main thing we're trying to instill in people, right? Whether you're interested in 3D printing or maybe the prosthetics industry or a completely different one. You know, it's just 3D printing and CAD design kind of allows you to think outside the box, literally, you know, the 3D printer box, but trying to see what you want to design, what printer to use, what software to use, you know, that's that whole process of figuring out what's that recipe for that end result that you're looking for, right?
Right, exactly.
And you guys have some pretty cool printers that are there at RIT, right? I mean, tell me a little bit about the AM Print Center there.
All right. So the AM Print Center is really a you know, it's a New York CAT center. So it's a center for advanced technologies. But what we do in the AM Print Center is really work with different companies. We work with you know, different government agencies, small businesses, startups, and what our purpose is to really support them in creating the next generation of types of additive manufacturing. So we're creating new fabrication methods here, as well as new materials to be used in those new fabrication methods, as well as some of the old ones. So that's our sort of main purpose. We do help with some design and things here, but it's really a mad scientist lab. It's really fun to be part of. And there's a lot going on. I think I told you our director, Dennis Cormier, even did a project at one point where he was printing with moon dust with NASA, which is just
that's a casual Wednesday afternoon, right? Just printing with some moon dust, I think, you know. Was that, I don't know if you can mention it, but was that in conjunction with Icon Build? Because they were a housing structure 3D printing company that was going to be working with NASA on bringing one of their printers to the moon to print with lunar dust.
Oh, really? That's interesting. So I'm not, you'd have to ask Dennis if they had any involvement. I know that, you know, the portion that Dennis and his team, you know, was working on, basically NASA had asked them to, you know, find a more, I guess, energy conservative way to print with moon dust as a material, because, you know, you can't just go to the corner store and buy a tool if you forgot to bring something and you're on the space station or wherever, you know, in space.
Right. Yeah.
So being able to print with those materials is important. But the thing is that, you know, you if you have these powders and you're trying to do some kind of powder bed process, a lot of times, you know, the sort of lower cost, you know, thing there is to use lasers, you know, light basically to in that process. However, it's, you know, if you're in space, it's laser isn't exactly the most, I guess, energy efficient tool to use in that case, because a lot of when you're using optical, you know, energy, a lot of when you're shooting it at a powder, a lot of it is reflected. Mm-hmm. And not conserved as heat, you know, to sort of fuse those particles together. So, you know, what Dennis's team was tasked with was finding out whether or not E-beam could be used. So electron beam. So instead of, you know, if you have optical, you know, if you're using optical, these are protons, this is positive, you know, particles, as opposed to electron beams, which are electrons and negative particles being shot at this. But Right. The thing is with electron beams, especially, you know, if you're printing metal powders, for instance, you know, they can, you know, have a lot of heat. They can conduct a lot of heat. So it works really good for metals. But what the thing is with these, with the moon dust, that's essentially like, I guess more like ceramic. So it really, the electrons sort of collected on the outside of that. Okay. When you have a bunch of negatively charged particles together, you know, and you're shooting an e-beam at it, what happens is basically it goes poof. So, you know, it was kind of a, okay, the answer from his team to NASA was like, this isn't going to be a process that works. Sure, it uses, I guess, less electricity than the lasers, but sure. Probably not the process you're going to go with.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, with lunar dust, to me, just, again, seems not so much far-fetched, but in the future, right?
Right.
How do you initially get some of that electricity, you know, there on the moon? How do you produce that to start? Are we just using a bunch of generators somehow and going off of the space station?
And printing in like low or no gravity situations, that's a whole other thing.
Yeah. You know, I've heard of some printing going on like underwater. To use the water as a cooling agent instead of fans. And to that, I mean, that's not, you know, no gravity, but that's got some different forces on the print itself. I can't imagine printing in space where there is no gravity, but you know, I wonder how that even affects the, you know, layer bonding and kind of either an FFF process or powder bed fusion process. And whether or not they need to then post-process it afterwards, you know, do they need to anneal the part? Do they need to otherwise do any kind of vapor smoothing or something like that to kind of help, you know, bind those particles together? You know, I've had one other guest on that was talking about, you know, printing on the moon and working in conjunction with some of these agencies that are looking to, you know, just do something with 3D printing in space. I think they wanted to print metal in space too for some of those parts that you wouldn't otherwise, you know, have on the space station, that something broke or they needed a tool and you're not just going to, you know, UPS ship that up to the space station, right?
Yeah, maybe someday. I know Amazon's looking at delivering in space.
Oh, I'm sure they are. You know, but no, that's a really, really cool project that you guys were involved in. You know, again, I'm super jealous now of, you know, what your position is there. And you get to be around all these really cool, fancy, you know, printers and really smart people as well there at RIT. You know, I'm going to have to take another trip out there soon. You know, when I was out there last year, didn't get a chance to go through the imprint center, but.
Oh, that's right. You need the tour.
Definitely got to get back out there.
You're certainly invited.
Yeah. Well, you know, in the brief chat before this, you know, we were taking a look at some of the printers behind you and, you know, that's something that I aspire to, having, you know, just again, like the breadth of different printing options, right? Because there are problems that require different printing options, whether it's MJF, SLS, SLA, you know, throw out all the acronyms. you know, that's a pretty cool and fun, you know, environment you get to work in there.
Yeah. And you only saw, like, this is one of our labs. We have a partner lab, the Brinkman Lab, where we have sort of the bigger equipment.
Okay.
This is where we have sort of some of the smaller and some of the characterization equipment and things like that. Sure. But yeah, I mean, I'm excited that we have, oh my gosh, I'm so excited. We have so many great new things going on. I don't know where to start, but, you know, in the other lab, the Brinkman Lab, that I was just talking about, we're going to be getting, in June, I believe it's coming, just up the road from RIT here. There's a company called Impossible Objects. We have one of their, and we've had for a while, one of their, prototype machines, but, now they have like a real, you know, industry ready machine coming out, and we're getting the first one. So super excited about that. But what it is basically, I mean, it's a process. It's almost like, well, my uncle used to own a newspaper, and I remember how that process worked. It's kind of similar. Like, you have these big reams of carbon fiber material, basically, where basically it's sort of fed in sheets on a conveyor belt kind of system, and powdered polymer is sprinkled on top of that, so you like peak in these kinds of materials, and then it sort of goes down and it plops, it slices the material, plops down a layer, slices the next material, plops down a layer, and at right. the end of this process, it's sort of stacking up these layers, and then it all gets squished and heated until all of those layers essentially melt together, and there's a process for removing sort of the excess carbon fiber at the end, but it's really impressive because it's so fast. So you have basically like an 8-inch by 18-inch bed, where these layers are being put down, but it's 25 layers every 60 seconds. Wow. And each layer being 18 by 18 inches, like, so it's fast. So it's really exciting that we'll have that machine soon and be able to play with that. The other exciting machine that we have just up here in Amprint, we just recently got a lithos ceramics printer. You probably saw them at the event here.
I've seen them at a couple of different events now, because they're just down the street from me in Troy here in New York.
So. Right. Yes.
Ceramic printing company.
They're great. We just got one of their printers. One that's basically it's built for testing and being mad sciencey with. it's cool because it's capable of printing bioabsorbable ceramic material. So if you're thinking about doing projects that would for instance, if you had a tumor in your jaw and you had to have part of your bone resected, you could actually create a ceramic lattice structure that you could seed that person's bone cells onto, and those bone cells would grow and over time fill in that area with bone that wouldn't be rejected. It's from the person, while the lattice structure itself was slowly being absorbed back into the body. So super exciting, to be able to have a machine that's capable of that kind of work.
I mentioned that I'm jealous. you get to play with all these cool printers and think about all these different applications for them. And that is super cool.
Definitely.
With the ceramic printing, that's kind of interesting. With I didn't realize that ceramics could be absorbed into the body. I've been working with a local anesthesiologist actually at Albany Medical Center, and we're looking at a couple applications for some bio materials that could be absorbed into the human body for some of the surgery applications that he's looking into, for different parts that otherwise could help with surgeries. So that's a pretty unique opportunity to think about those other materials, other printing processes could open those doors.
Look into hydroxyapatite as a material, tricalcium phosphate, that's another bioabsorbable ceramic material. It depends on what kind of forces are basically going to be placed on the area, right, what it's of the body and what it needs to do. If you need a little more structural support, zirconia is certainly something that you could use as sort of a cage to put bioabsorbable material in.
There's another company that through this work with the anesthesiologist that I've been doing, there's another company we came across that offers some biocompatible and body absorbable materials called Lattice Services and Lattice Medical, coming out of France, I believe. That was, I don't exactly know, I don't remember the names of the materials that they were using, but the when you mentioned having like a cage structure and having someone's cells be placed, you know, within that cage, and then otherwise being back absorbed into the body when those cells can then take over that other space and that function, they are providing breast prostheses actually for women who have, you know, those operations, where they're then utilizing this kind of lattice structure, and they're just printing with Ultimaker printers actually in a clean room.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, so this is actually a filament based machine, right? And they're able to, you know, print kind of the scaffold of this breast prosthesis, and then have that person's cells injected into it with some other medium, and then that cage just then gets absorbed by the body. So when I saw that company, what they were doing with that, you know, there's a couple of different projects we've got going on that have kind of a similar approach. You know, and that's a, again, a really interesting, you know, kind of problem solving way to, you know, provide, these kind of, you know, body absorbable, augmented parts that can otherwise, you know, help someone's body, I guess, regenerate in a way, you know. But that would be another cool company to look into if you guys are looking to print some, you know, body absorbable materials. Lattice Services is the name of their like filament company. They kind of had this spin-off because I think they developed the material specifically for their process through Lattice Medical, and then they saw again a need to and just, you know, a desire from other companies to use their materials, I think, for other uses. So Lattice Services came out from that. And they're a relatively newer company, but they've been going through some, you know, FDA type clearances over in Europe. And they're looking to, you know, once they have a couple, IRB, you know, studies that are ongoing right now, all finished up and approved, those might be coming to the US as well. Just some really cool applications of like, yeah, scaffold printing for, you know, with those different materials, you know, so something else to look into for your fleet of different materials and printers.
Right. Yeah. Cool. Well, thanks for the introduction to that, because I hadn't yet been exposed to them. So very cool.
Yeah, no, I'll give you some information here after the podcast here to get you introduced to them too. But you know, with all the different printing you've got going on there at the Amprint Center, you know, it's like having, how can you have a favorite? What would be your favorite printing process, or favorite machine, or favorite like kind of?
Why would you make me choose?
I mean, yeah, right. I just kind of had to throw that out there. Of, you know, if you could name a favorite, what are you gravitating towards the most here?
Oh my gosh, there's so many good things that are happening. I mean, of course, like, you know, where it all started is always going to have a special place in my heart, you know, the FFF printing, you know, because it was, you know, where I first made that connection between, oh my gosh, something that I can create can have a positive impact on someone else, you know? So that's always, I guess, going to have a really special place in my heart. And certainly like after being exposed to all these really super high tech, super fancy, amazing processes, and seeing some of the work coming from, you know, students and PhD students doing research in the lab and creating new processes here that are just phenomenal. You know, being able to take some of those more expensive, I guess, processes and trying to figure out how to, I guess, create something that would function
right.
similarly with a lower cost process.
Right.
That to me is an interesting puzzle and challenge, because I think that being able to create things at a low cost, especially when it comes to, you know, things like getting access to medical devices in right. prostheses and things like that, where there's a high need, but a very low ability to access is super important. So, right. You know, for me, I have seen personally the impact that, you know, that can have positively. And I know that you have, you know, as well seen some of that kind of impact. And so that sticks with you. So, I mean, I guess if I had to pick a favorite, it would be because of that, you know, that I choose that. Sure. But I, you know, there's absolutely, you know, as I said, there's so many other processes happening. Like one of the really cool processes that's coming out of Amprint right now, that's being, you know, sort of created here, you know, and developed further here, is a process, a different kind of metal jetting process. So it's liquid metal jetting, and you know, it's something that I think is going to take the world by storm in not too long of an order. So keep your eyes peeled for that. There's not a whole lot I can talk about.
No, that's quite all right. You've given us plenty of a teaser there, and that's super cool. I mean, metal printing is something that I've been interested in for a while now, because, you know, there are a lot of those metal parts on the prosthesis that, if those could otherwise be printed at a, you know, relatively not low cost, I would say, but appropriate cost, more or less, would be really interesting to apply to some of the, you know, 3D printing workflows that are happening now in prosthetic clinics. You know, because there are a growing number of clinics that are utilizing 3D printing in clinic. That otherwise, you know, we're doing some CAD design for people, sending out G codes for them to print, and to have, you know, a lot of this manufacturing done on site is, you know, I think that one of those next stages in some of this, you know, provision of care for people, again, across the world. If you can offer some of those services in places where they're otherwise needed, you know, very much, that they don't have other good, you know, opportunities to provide, that the more, I would say, you know, newer standards of care, you know, because some of the world's prosthetics do not have some of the same, you know, titanium componentry or, you know, same prosthetic feet as we have. So, that's a cool opportunity, I think, to, you know, get into the world of metal printing and see what's possible there.
Yeah, for sure. And this, you know, to sort of put a little bit more onto that teaser, would be a way to do high speed metal printing at a low cost.
Yeah. So very cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, you had shown off a little bit about your prosthetic arm there that you have.
Oh, yeah.
I definitely want to highlight that for a minute, because that came out of, oh, that is so cool. So cool. So you, I mean, what different types of printing do you have in just that one prosthesis? And then why was that conceived and you know, becoming tangible?
Okay, so initially, this was a project that sort of went along with my PhD research. So my PhD research centered on using density graded printable lattice structures to create sort of improved sockets for compression release stabilized sockets in upper limbs. So it sort of like started with that, and I was making a lot of lattice samples that I was compression testing and things for this research, and I was using a software from NTOP. I think you're familiar with those guys. So, and they had asked me to make a model for them. So this model was sort of something that it was a customized version where I was using their software to make it look really, really cool. I think it's also great if you're somebody who is a chef and you want to strain your spaghetti. Perfect. Multiple uses.
Oh my goodness.
But yeah, so I mean, this model, honestly, this was a great learning experience. There are definitely a few processes that went into this model. I use Autodesk Fusion is what I use to design the actual parts outside of the lattice. Use some generative design on this the elbow portion here. So you know from your own experience of having printed with FFF printers and things like that, that if you have something very thin like that, it's not going to be very strong if you're printing in a layer-wise fashion. You know, these parts were actually printed, most of them were printed on a Formlabs 3L machine, so a resin-based photopolymer. And then the parts that are, that you see, the lattice that are metal, were electroplated after the fact in metal. So, which is cool because that offers strength to those thinner parts that need to have the strength, you know, especially in the mechanical parts of the elbow. Sure. That wouldn't have had that strength otherwise. And it also means that, you know, being able to electroplate parts means that you can actually, you know, have lighter weight parts, you know, along with that lattice structure that, you know, has certainly some mechanical properties of its own, but you want to keep lightweight, especially if you're a person that has a very high level amputation, you don't have a lot of musculature or bone structure to lift something heavy. So, you know, creating something in a polymer and then simply electroplating it in metal to give it the strength and not having it metal all the way through is going to keep it lighter weight, which is also another cool thing about doing that. The rest of the socket portion was actually printed on an FFF machine using VariaShore TPU filaments.
Yeah.
I know you know lots about VariaShore.
Yeah.
That was what I did. And, you know, density grading and lattice, I actually have a little sample here, but basically you can take a material and a lattice unit cell structure, and you can change that unit cell. You know, basically what a lattice is a unit cell that's repeated over and over and over to create a lattice. So if you change certain things about that lattice structure and geometry, like, you know, the beam thickness, for instance, of each of those little beams that are in that structure, you're creating a different density, you're creating a different kind of compressibility. So if you have very thin beams, like at the top here, it's going to compress very easily. If you have thicker beams, like at the bottom, it's not. So you have a lot of energy absorption, impact absorption. These are used in helmets and that sort of stuff. But this is what we're using in inside of a flexible density graded lattice socket. And that was sort of my research. So that's what started this, I guess, design. And then I went from there with adding sort of the rest of the extension of the prosthesis.
Well, that is absolutely one of the most elegant prostheses I've ever seen. Congrats on that. That is amazing to have all those different printing processes within that one device too, right? I want to just nerd out just one second on electroplating. So, you know, we talk about all these, again, different post-processing processes that really should be and can be used for 3D printing. You know, for instance, we do a lot of annealing of polypropylene parts after they're FDM or FFF printed. But you know, I generally know the steps of electroplating, but for some of our listeners that don't really know, do you have something
to put on? You may know
what exactly, you know, what are we? So to my knowledge, right, you're actually laying down electrons on the surface of the of that part, and otherwise that you know, that metal is introduced to the object, and you know. Mm-hmm. Can you elaborate?
You're using it's basically like a layer of copper going on top of the, you know, on top of the plastic, essentially the resin,
right.
And then a layer of nickel on top of that. But it's almost like
copper and nickel
battery that you're putting in liquid and the electrons are traveling and sort of catching onto that material, right. And sticking.
Do they unstick after that, or is there like a is that a pretty you know permanent
it's on there
chemical
it's
process? Yeah.
Yeah, it's a chemical process. It's on there once it's on there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does that give it its color as well? Like, you know, that metal looking color, or was there any other post-processing done after that?
Oh yeah, this is what it comes out looking like. It's quite a nice process.
That is too cool. May I dare ask how much it costs to just print all of those parts and the post processing?
Two of these were created for about $3,000.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I mean that's not quite unheard of for you know some of those parts involved. Again, the
Right.
processes of printing. How long did it take to print all those parts and then you know assembly?
Well, I was doing a few other things throughout the process. So, I
Right.
mean, if I just, you know, crunched all the time together, probably a month. But yeah. Yeah, it ended up taking me a few months because,
Sure.
yeah, teaching and, you know, doing this
Sure.
whole other research thing, PhD
Yeah.
business.
You can have the PhD business. That's all right. Right.
But yeah,
Very
I
cool.
mean, that's. My love is in that kind of design and in finding sort of new and inventive ways to use additive to solve problems. I
Right.
just, you know, I have that I want to solve puzzles thing. I guess that's a good thing I'm an engineer, but yeah, I mean I try to temper that with you know, and I think that's where, you know, like I said, Haiti really had an impact on me as far as being like, oh, now I understand why we need to design this in a different way because I didn't understand the needs properly before.
Right.
It's being able to work with people who are using the devices that you're designing, see how they're using the devices in their lives or not using the devices in their lives, you know, and realizing that, you know, it's okay. I think one of the things that, you know, as far as, you know, the prosthetics class, one of the things that, you know, my students seem surprised by and that they eventually take in, which was one of the, you know, not everyone who has a limb difference wants or needs to have a prosthesis, you know.
Right.
Sometimes people choose to use them only for specific tasks and things like
Right.
that. So try to make the design for that person for that specific task, you know, if that's the
Right.
case. So it's really, it's so, you know, such an individual thing, and which makes additive just really the ideal, I guess, manufacturing process for making, you know, devices like prostheses, because it has to be, you know, by nature, it needs to be individualized because nobody's got the same residual
Right.
limb. Nobody's got the same underlying tissue. Nobody lives in the same place or works in the same place. You know what I mean? It's something where making a one-off device, which is, you know, where additive is the most competitive compared to a lot of different technologies. I mean, that's really, it's just made for this sort of thing. So I'm super excited to be a part of, you know, the doing some of the research, you know, that's going to eventually really help transform the capabilities for prosthetic devices, you know, so in just being able to work with clinicians, you know, on this kind of research with the socket research that I've been involved with clinicians, seeing how clinicians will use this in practice. Some of the things I would have never thought about, you know, when I'm creating different, you know, densities of lattice, you know, when a clinician gets a hold of that, they're like, oh, wait, so I could use this to literally pinpoint anywhere in the socket I want to be firmer or softer. Like this can really help a lot of my patients in a lot of ways, you know,
right.
And them sort of having that conversation with me about how they would use it, you know, makes me, oh, wait, but I can make that even better, you know, and then
exactly.
this really great you know, exchange, I guess, of different professional, I guess, sort of backgrounds that can work together to, you know, solve larger problems, you know, clinically and right. professionally.
Yeah, I think it definitely has a circular approach there with the problem solving process and, you know, looking at the different opportunities to 3D print something, whether it's just in a different orientation or in a different material, different printing process, and then applying that in real life to, you know, whether it's on people or in other industries, you know, for other general manufacturing purposes. I think there's a lot still left to be explored, right? Of
absolutely.
Just growing the technology itself, as well as growing the applications for it, right? So, you know, having a tool like that and understanding what that problem is first, to then get to a, you know, usable solution that would actually be utilized in practice, I think is something that some people are still trying to figure out. You know, they might have a good solution for something that they think would work, but then in practice, if it's, you know, giving the example of prosthetics again, they might try to put something on a patient and see, well, okay, that's not going to work for this reason or another, or the person just won't even use it. You know, they, to your point, having just the use case for especially upper extremity amputees, where whether or not they were either born with that limb difference or otherwise acquired that limb difference. You know, a lot of people who were born with a limb difference don't otherwise use some prosthetic devices, especially all day, versus, you know, lower extremity amputees who otherwise can't get around without them. So, you know, I think they're, to your point, that's it's a cool approach that you guys have there, and the opportunity to research so many different, you know, applications for it, I think is super exciting. So,
definitely.
Yeah, gotta keep in touch and see, you know, what you guys are up to, because I'm sure you'll be leaps and bounds ahead just even, you know, at the end of this year. So I'm excited to keep tabs on you guys and the work that you have going on there at the Amprint Center.
Yay. Well, you know, thanks for inviting us to be a part of your day today. This has been fun.
No, certainly.
Always good to catch up.
Was there anything else that you think, you know, the listeners here would gain some insight from about the Amprint Center? You know, how do they get in touch with you if they want to go through a 3D printing project with you?
Ah, okay. Well, you know, my email is jdmeie@rit.edu. That's probably the best way to get a hold of me. You know, you can certainly go to the Amprint Center website at RIT as well, and find our contact information there. Instagram, I'm the Mad Catter. So, I usually post some of my, you know, prostheses designs on there if people are interested in that aspect.
Very cool. Yeah, we'll have some of those links there in the show notes. But yeah, thank you very much for the time and some of the insight into your work there. Again, super jealous of some of the fun toys that you get to play with there and opportunities to work with so many talented individuals there. But yeah, appreciate the time and, you know, looking forward to seeing what you guys do next. You know, thanks to our listeners for hanging out with us this Fabrication Friday again. If you are, you know, gaining some insight from the Fabrication Friday podcast, please share it with your peers. We'd love to hear your feedback as well. If you're looking to maybe come on the podcast, you know, definitely reach out. Jade, I might have to ask you for some of those contacts for the impossible objects printing. That sounds pretty cool.
For sure.
And then maybe we'll get someone from Lithos or someone on, and maybe even Dennis in the future. So
Great.
Thanks again. And everyone, we'll tune in next time to the Fabrication Friday podcast, and happy printing.
Cheers.